ready for takeoff.
Welcome to the Remote CEO Show. My name is De Niro Bartolini, aka De Niro B. I'm an acclaimed business coach, and my moonshot is to change the face of work and business forever. With each episode, we bring you some of the most inspiring and insightful interviews with 6, 7, 8, and 9-figure entrepreneurs to crack the code on how to build your remote empire and have fun while doing it. Thanks for stopping by, and let's get started. What's going on, CEOs? De Niro B here with another episode of the Remote CEO Show. Today, we're here with Uwe Krysik-Akka. Uwe is the founder of online invoicing tool InvoiceBerry and no-code blogging platform BlogHandy. He founded both companies to help busy entrepreneurs and business owners automate their companies and focus on marketing and growing their businesses. I'm very excited for this chat, so let's get right into it. Uwe, welcome to the Remote CEO Show. How are you doing today?
Thanks a lot for having me on the show, De Niro. I'm very happy to, you know, be here with you and your listeners.
That is fantastic. We're happy to have you here as well. I ask every single one of my guests to tell us a bit more about their journey. So what made you become an entrepreneur? What is your story, Uwe?
Hey, you sort of make me feel very old right now, because it started over 2 decades ago. And in my childhood bedroom at my parents when I was 14 years old, I started creating online games. We had over 500,000 players back in Germany, where I'm from originally. And from there, it just, you know, went on. And very early on, I had this idea of InvoiceBerry. I was scratching my own itch there, because I actually had a business partner with my online games. And because I didn't have any knowledge about business, he would just transfer me half of the money we would make every month, until one day the German government asked for taxes, right?
Yeah.
That thing, you know, you have to pay so they can, you know, build roads and schools. Yeah. And I was still going to school. And so I actually just, you know, fired up my computer, you know, created an invoice in Excel and sent him invoices every month for my share of, you know, the profits. And then we had this issue that I changed my laptops. You know, business was going well. I made enough money. I could buy a new laptop. And one day, the accountant of my parents asked me, hey, you know, where are those invoices for last year? And I was like, well, they're on the, you know, previous laptop. That's sort of before Dropbox became a thing. Yeah. And, you know, cloud storage. So I had to go through all the old bank statements and recreate invoices. And I was thinking, you know, there should be something easier. Yeah. And then I went off to London to study. And after I finished my studies, I was thinking, hey, you know, I still have this idea in the back of my mind to create some sort of system to make it easier. Because I have a bit of an accounting background, so I do understand quite a lot when it comes to accounting, but most new entrepreneurs and small business owners just don't know a lot about accounting. So I wanted to merge those two worlds of understanding accounting, but also understanding, you know, programming, computer science, and user interface design. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to just create a very simple solution to make it very simple to create invoices, but also to never again lose any invoices as it happened to me as a kid, right? So, yeah. And that's how InvoiceBerry got started.
Wow, wow. That's a very interesting story. I know a lot of entrepreneurs start early, but having 500,000 users when you're not even, I don't know if you were drinking at 14, but some countries grew up there, I do. But, you know, in North America, where the majority of our listeners are, like, we're really talking about young, being very, very young. I want to talk about how you build InvoiceBerry, but before we get there, I'm really interested in knowing a bit more about your gaming platform. Like, were you doing like flash games back in the day, or were you actually developing full out like video games?
So no, the so there were browser-based online games. So imagine how it started was a weekend project where you literally had a white page, blue links. There were no graphics or anything. I'm not a graphic designer, so there were blue links. And if you remember back in the day when you pressed on a link, it would turn purple the next time. Yeah. And there was no design at all. And it was just all a strategy game, I guess you would call it. Mm-hmm. And you would have to build your own island, build soldiers on it, a bit of like Age of Empires, but imagine it in your browser without graphics. Yeah. And very early on, within a weekend, I got my first 100 players.
Wow.
And then actually I sold 50% at an evaluation of, I think, 300 euros. So, okay. You know, obviously back then, over 20 years ago, nobody was talking about valuations and startups and funding. So it was just a random guy telling me, hey, I'm going to give you 150 euros if you give me half of your game and we build it up together. Right. So and that was a good decision because this guy had business knowledge. He had servers. He had a designer. So he really helped to build up the game with me together. And I, you know, was green behind the ears. I had no knowledge. I was, I think, 14 turning 15 at the time. So I probably had the first sip of beer because, you know, we can start drinking legally at 16 in Germany. So I probably had the first sip at the dinner table with my parents, but that's about it, right? I had no knowledge about life, about entrepreneurship. And so I found this guy. He was probably 10 years my senior. Mm-hmm. He had a business. He had, you know, like some web hosting, I think at the time. And he just, you know, brought in a lot of knowledge. Back then, the first, I think, 30 to 40,000 signups we got from like a 300 euro campaign. That was just insane. Nowadays, if you spend 300 euros, you're happy if you get probably 5 signups or 10 signups or something like that, but not like 30,000, 40,000 signups.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's fantastic. And so let's switch to VoiceBerry one second, because the point that really a lot of entrepreneurs really like get stuck is going from the idea stage to being alone to like building it into an actual business. And so I wanted you to take us back to when you started in VoiceBerry. First off, when was that? And second of all, a question that a lot of my listeners absolutely love when I ask is, can you tell us about your hiring strategy? What did you let go of first? And then how did you build up from there your team?
So in VoiceBerry, I started it 14 to 15 years ago, actually. It started very slowly at the end of my studies when, you know, I had to make a decision what to do next. I always loved entrepreneurship and, you know, working with small businesses, especially. And so SaaS businesses, subscription businesses were very early back then. I heard about 37 Signals and Basecamp. And I read the first book of Jason Fried and DHH about, you know, how to, you know, make decisions for your customers rather than making them choose. And so I really liked that idea and I wanted to incorporate it into InvoiceBerry to make it as simple as possible. So I've done all the sort of UX decisions, the programming. I'm a self-taught programmer. I made all of that by myself. I think the first outsourcing that happened there was a designer, because I'm not a graphic designer at all. So that was the first part-time hire I made there. And then for a long time, I just went solo. And then it was marketing help, basically. We had so much blog content to write. It's one of our main strategies, content marketing. So all the content to create it, to build backlinks, to research good quality evergreen blog posts, takes a lot of time. I'm not really a natural writer to do guest post outreach and all of these things. I started hiring a lot of writers. Early on, already before COVID hit, we did all this remote teams. So I never really had an office. I always decided to grow the company remotely rather than, you know, have a fixed office, which, you know, just takes space and costs money and is sort of inflexible.
Yeah. So I was saying that before we get into the part where we're going to talk about the actual way that you're building your team and everything else, I wanted to ask you about SEO, because my listeners at home know that we at the Remote CEO are big in SEO and they will always want to know more about it. And so I'm always interested in asking this question to founders and CEOs, because they kind of have walked the walk themselves. Maybe like you said, you're not the one writing and doing backlinks, but at the same time, you're overseeing the whole thing. So what has worked for you when it comes to quantity and quality of blog posts as well as backlinks?
I'd say it's always been a mixture for us. So we've done very well with guest posts a few years ago, where we were on very big blogs, marketing blogs and other SaaS blogs like Campaign Monitor with very high domain ratings, where we positioned guest posts quite well. I think we were a bit ahead of the curve at the time. Mm-hmm. And that was always mixed with a big team of freelance writers. So I've done quite well with finding writers in the 4 to 30, 40 cents per word range. Mm-hmm. And I would even say, and that's quite controversial, but we've had some writers at the lower range said outperformed native US writers in the 30, 40 cent per word range. So mm-hmm. we've done quite well there, because we could just create at our budget range, just way more content than competitors that, you know, just overpaid basically per word.
Makes total sense. That's great. And so now I kind of want to talk about the way you're building culture in the business. You said that you studied outsourcing a lot of the work that you either were not familiar with or you just didn't want to do, which is a great step. Now, every single business, when it grows, has growing pains. And I want to make sure that our listeners at home learn from our guests. So what are a couple of things that you know you did right, but also a couple of things, even one thing, that you wish you did different if you knew better now?
That's a tricky one. I have to say that the culture is very difficult, I think, in remote teams. And therefore, I think the main mistake I've made was in the hiring process. I really optimized it and I automated a lot of the hiring and filtering early on. And we've got a very good streamlined process. But then when it comes to the interview stage and the first personal contact, I've probably done some mistakes in the hiring, and I hired freelancers and also full-time remote workers that didn't fit the culture. And I didn't notice that in the hiring, like in the hiring interview, and that was definitely my mistake. So I think I've done extremely well in the attracting attention and talent and mm-hmm. filtering them through. But then in this final stage, I sort of haven't figured it out sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I just had some team members in the past that just, you know, didn't fit the culture I mean, the culture in a company, in a remote company with a few team members is usually whatever the founder's culture is, right? Mm-hmm. So that didn't fit all the time.
Yeah. Okay. It makes sense. And now when you look back and you say, okay, there are some things that really did well that you wish other entrepreneurs would do in order to either speed up the process of building their business or at least make sure that they don't make other mistakes like that. So which would be one or two things that you did well while building your business?
I think what's very important is what a friend told me, and I really implemented, is this idea of that you should always be hiring, because there is churn, and it's not like our parents or grandparents, they worked for their lifetime in the same company. But nowadays, if someone works for 2 years in one company, that's seen as a long time, right? So you should always expect that a team member wants to leave. And it might be not your fault, right? It might be just they want a new challenge. They just feel like they want, to completely change their direction. And I've seen that with most of my team members, that at some point they just decide, I don't want to be a writer anymore. I want to be a designer or programmer, and vice versa. And, this is partly just out of your reach, unless you're so big that you could position them in another part of your company. And so I really like this idea of always trying to hire people, or always at least having a backlog of, let's say, CVs, or a backlog of people coming in. And for that, to streamline your hiring funnel, so to actually not just build a marketing funnel for new customers, but also a funnel to attract new talent in your company. So whenever, I'm looking, let's say, for a new content writer, I can just switch that on. I get a lot of people go through that funnel. I filter it out automatically with the help of Google Sheets and Zapier and a few other automations. And it's a very streamlined and systemized process, which I think is very important, because this is the difference of spending 10 hours or 1 hour to, start the hiring process again.
That is actually a very interesting concept. Not a single person has ever brought up, and I really like that idea of comparing a marketing funnel to a hiring funnel. A business needs both. Of course, on one end, you want sales and you need clients, but if the business does not have good people that are operating it, it's still not going to be successful in the long run. And I think what you just said right now is absolutely important. I know a lot of business owners and all businesses that fail because the founder does not take hiring seriously, and they may stick with a bad hire or bad employee just because they don't want to go through the process of hiring someone else. It's going to be, slowing things down, they say, or, I don't have time to run a lot of interviews. But if you're able to automate it and actually just get in touch with the right people, I think that's actually a very, very interesting concept, and I'm sure that our listeners at home will use that. So another question that I had for you is, when it comes to hiring, do you do mainly full-time, part-time? Do you do contractors? If you do contractors, what do you hire contractors for?
It's a mixture, to be honest, and it really depends on the need. So everyone on the team is technically a contractor, just for legal reasons, because we're distributed around the world, and it wouldn't be feasible to hire them. But then the contractors work sometimes part-time, sometimes full-time, or on a per project basis. So it really just depends. Most content writers work on a per word basis, designers, on an hourly basis, but with a fixed amount of hours per month. And then the developers or marketing works more on a sort of full-time or day rate basis. So it's a mixture, and I think that's very important. And at the beginning, I used to ask people how they would like to be compensated, and now it really depends on the position as well. Because if it's a position where I just don't need someone full-time, let's say a graphic designer, and I just need someone maybe for 10 hours or 20 hours to fix up some social media graphics, then we might just tell them, look, this is a per hour, per week basis. And that's normally fine as well. I think it's just important to give people flexibility nowadays, because there are a lot of people looking for work, but there's also obviously loads of companies moving remote and looking for good quality talent. So, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's a marketplace, right? Yes. And it's not just about the compensation. I've talked to a lot of people. They're happy to charge less per hour if I offer them a fixed rate per month or per week. So that's also something to consider. If you want to, you know, fit something within your budget, maybe try to give team members more, instead of more flexibility, give them more safety by offering them a fixed amount per month, so they can they know that they get that money every month. They can pay the mortgage or their car loan or, you know, whatever they need. And they often tend to be happy to take a bit of a pay cut.
Absolutely. I think contract, on contract has been one of the solutions that a lot of businesses, when they're scaling up and they want to stay lean, is the best way, because they can kind of dial up or dial down depending on seasonality, depending on how the business margins are, et cetera. So it's a very, very good point that you're bringing that up. Listen, well, actually, one question that I ask everyone is there anything exciting coming down the pike in your business that you want to share with our audience?
So, I mean, we always, you know, work at InvoiceBerry to make it better, to improve it. So at the moment, we're working with Stripe. Mm-hmm. The payment provider, to have a deeper integration with them. So obviously, when you send out your invoices, you can, you know, connect to a number of different payment providers and, you know, accept the card payments on your invoices. And coming up this summer, we just signed an exclusive deal with Stripe. So we have an even deeper integration with them. So all of our customers from, I think, 50 plus countries where Stripe now operates around the world, you know, can benefit from that. And so we're very excited about that, to make just a whole, you know, chain of sending out quotes with InvoiceBerry, and, you know, turning them into invoices. And then once they're sent out, to also accept the payments with our exclusive partner Stripe now. So that's something I'm very excited about this summer.
Amazing, amazing. All right, Uwe, I know for a fact that my listeners want to know more about you and your business. So where can people find you online?
So the best place for InvoiceBerry is obviously the website, invoiceberry.com. And I'm always happy to receive emails, uwe@invoiceberry.com. And my personal website is uwetrice.com, uwedrice.com. And I list also my side projects and other, you know, projects and companies there, so you can find out everything else about me.
Perfect. Amazing. Well, again, thank you very much for being at the Remote CEO Show. I'm looking forward to having you back in the future. And in the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks a lot for having me on the podcast.
And this is it for today, CEOs. Thanks for staying with us until the end. Can I ask you a big favor? Can you please leave a review? I know the podcast app is not super straightforward, so if you don't know how to leave a review, just DM me on Instagram at DeNiroB, DeNiroB, and I will send you the direct link to the review section. And to show you my appreciation, I will answer any business question you ask me during that conversation. So thank you again, and I will talk to you again soon.